stories and poems. And we were just finishing up plans for a session that we're starting up again for another nonprofit. So those are other ways, definitely, for legacy. But I really believe that, I've heard it said that we're happiest when our lives have meaning and we can have a positive impact. And for me, one of those things is focused purpose, as you heard at the beginning of my retirement. But it's also important for me to leave an endowment. And so picking up on the theme of my book, Moving Forward on Your Own, this is to establish the Moving Forward Endowment. That I like the idea that that's going to continue giving forever, 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 forever. That matters to me. And I told you about my birthday. Well, this is also partly the way that I can celebrate 75 years of giving and growing by putting this in place. And actually, I want to, before I end and say thank you, I'll tell you about a piece of research. I like research. I was a researcher. It was done with charitable giving. And they had professionals, financial advisors, working with three different groups of clients. And the groups were, they tried to get them similar in terms of demographics, like ages and men and women and things like that. And so they're working on their estate plans with all three. And the first group, they had the advisor not talk about leaving a charitable gift in their estate plan at all. No mention whatsoever, just like which of your kids do you want to get what? Okay. The second group, they said, would you like to include a charitable gift in your estate plan? And the third group, they said to the people, many of our clients include charitable giving in their estate plans to benefit those organizations that are near and dear to them. Would you like to do the same thing? Well, can you guess what the outcome was? Which of those three groups made more charitable gifts in their estate plans? Well, if you guess group three, you're right. The first group, where it was not mentioned at all, or the second group, just asking them kind of an open-ended question, didn't come along with the results that third group, where they said most of our clients do this. And I was sharing this with a group of attorneys recently with a session that I did. And one of the fellows said, oh, I don't believe that's true. So I ask all my clients about charitable giving, and they're really not interested. And I said, well, what is it you say to them? And this was his quote. I wrote it down so I remember it. Oh, I always ask my clients, I say, you don't want to remember charitable organizations in your will, do you? Duh. So he's just set them up for the response on that. And I also believe that as an advisor, we help to lead the way by talking about what we have done with our own plans, and that can help encourage others to do the same thing. So I'm going to close out. Thank you very much for having me do this.
I have so many questions. If you don't mind, I'm asking the questions.
Yes.
And I may end up asking you to show the slides again. I wanted to go all the way back to the Charitable Remainder Trust. I know that some of the participants may have the understanding of it, some may not. So let's just go back to the very basic. I think based on what I heard, this is obviously someone who has to be charitable inclined.
Yes.
Having this charitable remainder trust, you mentioned that the trust itself every year needs to have some money out, and then the remainder will go to the charity. So I think that the breakdown you provided was minimum 10% of the trust itself goes to the charity toward the end of that 20 years or whatever number of years that you set up.
When that's actuarially determined.
Right. So in each year, you have mentioned minimum was 5% or more. Is that correct? Would you mind to go through it?
It's the payout rate must be 5% or more.
Okay.
Of the value of the unit trust. So like somebody couldn't set it up so that only 3% went to my son. Right. I said, and I set the figure at 6%. So right. That's 6 times a million. That's 60,000 a year that he gets. Right. And that 6% doesn't change with, as you know, with the unit trust, it's 6% of the value of the assets in that.
Correct.
With an annuity trust, which I didn't use, annuity trust, it's like the 6%, and that continues at 6% no matter what happens with the value of the mm-hmm. trust, mm-hmm. if it goes down or if it goes up. And I chose the unit trust. There is a potential for growth so much, but I can't predict what the stock market's going to do. Mm-hmm. And so I want based on the value of that, rather than $60,000 a year, mm-hmm. which there have years ago, like if you look at the history of some of these things, when some of these annuity trusts were set up in the heyday, when interest rates were so incredibly high, and people set these at payout rates that were like at 10%, for a couple of years that lasted fine. And then we had downward trends. And so the value of the trust shrunk.
Right.
And for some of those, it just went away. I mean, there wasn't anything left at the end for the nonprofit organization.
So I guess it's important to understand the difference between the unit trust and annuity yeah. trust. And
yes.
depending upon the purpose of the client, and in your case, the unit trust is the best option for the beneficiary in this case.
Yeah, I wanted to balance what was going to benefit my son and what would benefit
right.
the nonprofit organization.
Right. Okay, good. So then now we got that charitable remainder trust all clear away in terms of technical part of it. The other questions that I have is, obviously having the attorney firm set up this and having the trustee after you are gone in place, there's obviously a number threshold that is ideal for someone who wants to set this up. If someone who has only $100,000 IRA, this is probably not necessarily the route to go. So is there a threshold that you would recommend?
Yes, that $250,000. People who have less than that, who want to do, they might consider charitable gift annuity. And that just requires a simple contract between the individual and the organization. It would be a testamentary charitable gift annuity at that individual's death. And the gift annuity would be for one individual. If they wanted to have, I had one client that they set up 15 testamentary charitable gift annuities. They didn't have children, but they had nieces and nephews. They had 15 of them. And so they set up a charitable gift annuity for each of them, each of the nieces and nephews, that'll go for their lifetime. And it was a percentage of an IRA account that I've forgotten. Maybe it was a couple $100,000. So they were going to be small gift annuities, but that nonprofit organization was fine in setting it up. So, and that couple is still alive. So it hasn't started paying nieces and nephews yet. But I would say for smaller than $250,000, I would look at testamentary charitable gift annuities.
Okay, so that sounds great. So in terms of now we know this, the threshold, the size of the trust that's most viable to move forward. One of the questions that I have is obviously the money sitting in a trust needs to be invested. So does do you then have a company manage those accounts? What does
right.
the trustee manage that? How does it actually work?
Yes, you have great questions. Right now, it's an unfunded trust.
Right.
There's nothing in it. When I die, the money mm-hmm. goes into it. The successor trustee will be this nonprofit organization, and it's their responsibility to pick who the manager is. And they have one that they have used forever. It's actually State Street Bank. And that's another reason that I wanted to go with this nonprofit organization, because State Street Bank, which is headquartered in Boston, I believe, they have a whole division that just deals with philanthropy gifts like this and others. They know what they're doing. And so I feel very comfortable about that. I did not, in setting this up, I hit a lot of barriers. There were some places it looked like it would work out to be done locally, but then I realized, well, who was going to be managing it and the fee schedules, and it would really eat into it. But State Street Bank is not that way. It's, you know, part of their mission is to help philanthropy. And so their fees and expenses are much lower. So I dug into that because I wanted to. Now, is that who's going to be managing it when I die at 104? I don't know, but right now it looks very good.
So one of the things to look into is that other than working with the charities that you inclined to have the money go into, but also look at who actually is going to be managing that, because it does matter. If they do a good job with a low fee, that amount could potentially could continue to grow. And that's great for the charity and also great for the beneficiaries at the same time.
Yes. And because I wanted the successor trustee to be the charitable organization, because like they're not charging fees against it. Had I just set it up with, you know, I could have named a financial advisor to be this, or advisor's firm to be the successor trustee. And there might be firms that would love to do that, but then they would certainly be charging fees against it. The nonprofit organization is not going to. Right. So it took me actually three months to sort all of that out, because it looked like locally there was the possibility of having it done. I thought, oh, that's really going to be cool because I'll be connected locally. But then when I saw like how the successor trustee was going to work out and the management was going to work out, that's not what I wanted.
And so be sure to check out the successor trustee and the management behind it, because it does make a big difference in terms of the fee and how they manage.
Yes.
I wanted to turn into a different type of question. This, you know, the stretch IRA, which oftentimes that we are referring to, you know, after the 2020 expiration day, often we're referring to as non-spouse. So in your case, your son is a non-spouse. If they don't do anything, don't do anything, he has to take it out in 10 years, and regardless how he actually take it out. But for spouse, they can still stretch. So my question would be that in this idea, will a spouse actually be a good candidate as well? Because, and I'll share a little story here. Yeah. And the reason I wanted to share this was I had a conversation with my mom last year. She told me some horrible stories about my dad's siblings. So my dad has two elder brothers who, before their wives die, they were joined to the hip. They love each other. They're just very wonderful, loving couples. Yeah. And both of these uncles of mine, if you will, that have sworn in front of everyone that if their spouse die first, they will not do anything. They will just be alone for the rest of their life. All right. So what happened?
I know where you're going.
I know. So what happened was that my mom actually witnessed the two brothers almost simultaneously that their wives passed away. Within 3 months period of time, somebody flew to the next to them out of nowhere. Mm-hmm. And so my mom was really concerned. Yes. She wanted to make sure her portion of the money is taken care of. So I had to actually walk her through of how to contact the attorney. Now, my mom lives in Taiwan. She doesn't live here. So it's not something I could just take her. And my mom is very traditional. She doesn't want my dad to know that she's setting this up. So she's keeping everything so secretive for the purpose of she doesn't want someone else get the money. She'd rather have her children or somebody or charity to have it. So my question is, the spouse in this case, and as you were talking about this, I'm thinking about, well, I probably want to do the same, even though my IRA is going to go to my husband. But, you know, just in case if somebody flew to right next to him in 3 months or even less, right? I wanted to make sure that he gets enough annual basis, right? He, you know, likely that you can stretch, but in this case, it's a spouse. So could you talk about if a spouse situation versus non-spouse, will that matter in this case?
Oh, yes, yes, yes. You can see I'm just stomping at the bit to tell. I had a case where a couple, like, they remarried. And they married later in life. I think they were about 50 years old. She was 50, he was 40 when they remarried. He had never been married. He was a postdoc PhD nerd, and the wife actually had been married many times. I think it was about 5 times. Okay, they had a little farmette and he loved to work on stuff. And they were clients of mine. And he said, you know, probably what's gonna happen is I'm gonna have a tractor accident and I'm gonna die in some farm accident. And she will still be alive. And he lived a frugal lifestyle and he had lots of money in his retirement account too. And he said, you know what, what's gonna happen is within a year, she's gonna find some muscle bound guy at the gym and she's gonna remarry him.
And let's just name him Fabio. I always love, yes, Fabio.
Fabio. And I will have given her all of my IRA assets. But then Fabio is going to outlive her and he will wind up getting everything that was mine. I don't want to do that.
Right.
So we created what they called, and I know this is not politically correct, but the husband called it the bimbo trust.
I love it.
That it would, that money in his IRA, and he had, this was like 20 some years ago, he had well over $1 million, which would be worth a lot more now. Should she die first? No, he dies first. That IRA, that $1 million, would go into charitable remainder unit trust and pay her income for her lifetime. And after that, the proceeds were going to go to, he had 2 major universities that he'd attended that he's gotten his degrees from, his church organization. By the way, somebody asked a question in the chat room about can a charitable religious organization manage these. Those are top. And I can tell you a couple of them that are really, really good. All right. So anyway, there was like 4 or 5 different organizations that would get it. And he knew that they would get it, but his wife would be taken care of all along. And she'd get that income. And you know what? She was happy about that because she said it would give her an excuse. So when Fabio said, oh, we should be flying to this and that and doing so and so, she said, oh, honey, I would love to do that, but can't do it. All my money is, it's in trust. That's how I've got it. So it was a delightful.
That's an excellent design. Yeah, it's an excellent design for that.
So, and that was done years before, there wasn't the stretch IRA problem and all that, but it was right. Just to protect that money.
Right. Now, would you then talk about the religious organization that you mentioned that it would be ideal trust successors?
Yes, there are ones that I have personally worked with. My late husband was a Lutheran pastor, so I was connected strongly with Lutheran. So when California Lutheran invited me to speak, it was just like, that's nice.
Thank you.
The Evangelical Lutheran Church in America Foundation, they're very, very big. When you look at how nonprofits are rated, they're rated right up there in the top. They do wonderful things. And I created and helped donors create a lot of charitable gift annuities, charitable remainder trusts, gifts like that through the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America. The Presbyterian Foundation is excellent. Their record keeping, their information for donors, just their field staff that go out and visit are wonderful. My particular trust, I've done it through the Unitarian Universalist Association, which I'm a member of now. And I am just blown away by what they've done, bent over backwards to help to make this possible. They have a wonderful attorney who is a field person, and he was just really, really great. So I've had personal experiences with those three. I know There are, there was another one that it was a Jewish foundation that was excellent. The large organizations will be able to do these kinds of trusts, like I'm thinking of St. Jude and the Cancer Society, big organizations like that. Your local food pantry is not going to do it. And a local congregation is not going to do it. It's going to be their umbrella organization that will have the nonprofit foundation. And you're not going to get billed for the work that they're doing with you, because they know that to get this done right, at the end, there'll be the payoff for their organization. So religious organizations and very large, like health organizations, are the ones that I've had personal experiences with myself and with the donors that I've helped set up these programs.
And that's a really important point. You know, for people doing this, you do have to have some sort of charitable incline to do this. Yeah, yeah. We do have a question in the chat. Paul was asking.
One more, like some community foundations may be able to do this, but they also may be apprehensive about, because it's kind of new, and I found that to be with my local community foundation. They want to get moving on it, but they don't have facilities in place yet to go there.
Okay, so thank you for that. So Paul's question here is that the testamentary CRT is set up first as a revocable trust, then it became irrevocable after you passing. So he's just confirming, is that the case for yes. your situation?
Okay. Yes. And yep.
And we have another question here is the income paid from the CRT or testamentary CRT taxable as an ordinary income, or does it able to raise people's IRMAA? I don't know what IRMAA bill is. I'm assuming that's taxable income. Can you talk a little bit about that?
It is going to be taxable income. I've read one article that said that there's the possibility of, if it's a long payout of it, that there might be at some point get into capital gain, but income rather than ordinary. But for the most part, it's ordinary income they're going to pay taxes on.
All right. So thank you so much. Now, we obviously have talked quite a bit of mostly mechanical side of it, as well as the real meaning and purpose of giving to the charity. If there's one advice that you could give to either the financial advisors or people who are interested in doing that, what would that be?
That would be that little research study I said at the end, and to ask that question along the line of many of our clients have included charitable organizations that are important to them in their estate plans. Would you like to do the same thing? And oh, by the way, I've done it myself, because I've left right. a partial beneficiary of my IRA. It was so easy to do. I just changed the beneficiary form, and they're going to get 5% of my retirement account after I pass on.
Well, thank you so much for that. And I think that the IRMAA is the Medicare higher premium.
Yes.
That would, if the beneficiary is in receiving Medicare. All right. So thank you. Thank you so much, Dr. Rio. We are so glad to have you for our Next Gen Mentoring Forum. What an incredible, informative session. Thank you so much. And I also wanted to take time to thank California Lutheran University School of Management Financial Planning Program for sponsoring today's Next Gen Mentoring Forum. Now, California Lutheran University School of Management, we do offer MBA in financial planning that helps financial advisors pursue a leadership position or grow their financial planning practice by deploying advanced financial planning techniques with client effective communication, financial counseling, as well as practice management, streamlining that with FinTech. If you know someone or someone who might be benefit from our program, please ask them to sign up for our info session. Our next info session is going to be in February the 24th at 2 p.m. And on the screen, you have the info session URL. Now, our next Next Gen Mentoring Forum session is actually next Tuesday, January the 25th. Please join me to interview Dominic Henderson, who is going to talk about why should you consider a career in financial planning? And thank you all, and see you at the next Next Gen Mentoring Forum. Be safe and be well. And thank you, Dr. Real, very much for today's session.
Thank you. And I just thought, if somebody wants to read a little bit more about it, if you go to my website, there's two articles that were published about it. One is Jonathan Clements, Helmel Dahlberg, and then there's another one out there too, but that'll just tell you some more about what you learned.
I will include that into our blog site that will have this recording as well. So thank you so much, Dr. Rio. And thank you, everyone. Be safe and be healthy. Take care. Bye-bye.